This is an excerpt from a Thai forest monk named Ajahn Chah, one of the masters in our lineage, Theravada Buddhism, with Against the Stream, and he's since passed, but this excerpt's called The Still Forest Pool. He says, "Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become still in any surroundings, like a clear forest pool. All kinds of wonderful, rare animals will come to drink at that pool, and you will see clearly the nature of all things. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. This is the happiness of the Buddha." Tonight I wanted to talk about this topic of equanimity, which is somewhat of a strange word. Before I started coming here, I didn't use that word ever, equanimity. The Pali Sanskrit word for equanimity is upekkha, and what it translates to mean is there in the middleness. I think Ajahn Chah speaks to this pretty clearly when he says, "You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still." In some sense, the Dharma, practicing meditation, doesn't really offer much in the terms of achieving anything. Like, I'm going to become a level 3 master insight meditator. But perhaps I think it would be somewhat safe to say that the aim or the goal, if there was one, of Buddhist practice, of in particular our meditation part of Buddhist practice, is equanimity. There in the middleness. The Buddha woke up to this observation that we tend to have conditioned responses around pleasure and pain in our lives. The biological system of the human being is wired to crave pleasure, to crave comfort, security, to avoid pain. And so equanimity offers us an ability to investigate that, what they call the pleasure-pain dichotomy, the craving and clinging to pleasure, the avoidance of pain, whether it's physical, mental, emotional. Equanimity allows us the ability to investigate that further, to see what are my conditioned responses around pain and pleasure. These reactions of mind, of body, obsession, anticipation, expectation, fear, anxiety, shame, guilt, regret, hatred, violence, oppression on a larger scale, separation on a larger scale. And so we're bringing into our awareness oftentimes both some of the ways that we feel like we're living skillfully and the internal habits and dynamics that are working really well for us, where I do have patience and compassion already, where I do find myself having gratitude and love and connection and intimacy already, and also this more dark side of our human experience where we tend to avoid, or we tend to habitually self-criticize or judge, or the list goes on. I was sitting with a Buddhist monk a couple months ago, and he said, which I found really compelling at the time, he said, if you back away from a shadow, it just gets darker. And so we're opening our awareness to see, okay, you know, metaphorically, what's in the room? Am I willing to go in every corner? And the result of being willing to do this work and to check in and to practice and to dedicate some time to slowing down and to be willing to sweep the room and to look around is, as Ajahn Chah says, the mind becomes still and all strange and wonderful creatures come to drink from this still pool. This is an interesting point, and it's shown in the archetypal story of the Buddha as well in his life. During his awakening, this demon on my knee, Mara, came to visit the Buddha. And Mara is this shadow side. It's what's in the shadow of our experience. It's what's difficult. It's what's challenging. It's the critical mind. It's the sense of separateness, of feeling apart from. It's the obsession and craving that once I get the relationship or the job or the status or the right amount of praise and I arrange the furniture right in the room, then I'm going to be fucking happy. And Mara are all of these parts of ourselves that in one way or another seem to give us this sense that we're lacking. And the Buddha's meeting of Mara, this balance, this there in the middleness, this willingness to be with Mara, was such that he sat and was willing to observe the behavior of Mara, was willing to observe all of the tricks, all of the voices, all of the many themes. And his response to Mara was not, I'm going to get rid of you, or go the fuck away, leave me alone. His only response to Mara really was, I see you, Mara, I see you, Mara. This is the subtle gift of mindfulness. This is the shift in perspective where being able to become an observer of our internal dynamics, obsession, self-hatred, self-judgment, self-appreciation, gratitude, joy, becoming an observer of our internal dynamics allows us more fluidity with how we respond to them. Mindfulness is relational. So whereas I was hoping early on, at least, to have meditation be able to take me to a place outside of my suffering, it actually brought me right to it. And then the practice becomes, how do you meet? What's the response? The two wings of Buddhist practice often are described as seeing clearly and responding wisely, or wisdom and compassion. Awareness, seeing clearly, wisdom alone is very bad news. I've known many times in my life when I've been caught up in obsession, when I've been isolated, lonely, afraid, scared, in a bad relationship, in a bad job, And in order to balance these two wings, we need to also have this ability to respond. And so seeing clearly really only becomes a ground in which we can then ask the question, what is this need? What is this need? Does that make sense? This seeing into the dynamic of obsession, compulsion, harshness, judgment, fear, anxiety, distress, overwhelm, and saying, what is this need? Pleasure, joy, excitement, what is this need? This is situational. In Christianity, this is where you would talk about agape, or how Jesus described love. This is where we get situational ethics from, as opposed to what we would call legalist ethics, which is a set of commandments. This was the big move in Christianity from commandment law to situational. And this is what the Buddha really narrowed in on as far as what do we respond with, what do we offer, what's needed. And that changes depending upon our situation, depending upon what we're experiencing. As we continue to practice, and I say this because it's very common and apparent once you sit with a sangha or a community for some time, is that we start to confront more areas of the room and more of the shadows in the corners of the room. And when we get into new territory, we often find ourselves feeling confused, overwhelmed, afraid. Because when we expand ourselves to the edge of our comfort zone and we allow more into our awareness, we're starting to embark on a new path that we haven't been on before. So what's needed is often met with, I don't know, confusion, uncertainty, and doubt. I say that not because I have any real solution for that myself, but other than I feel like it's important to normalize a little bit that uncertainty is not necessarily a problem. Feeling stuck or confused or lost and what's the response, that may take some time to know. Okay, I get in this bad relationship, and it's the same one every time. I've basically dated the same person my whole life. I'm not talking about my partner, by the way. Don't tell her. I've gotten in the same relationship over and over. I've dated the same person my whole life. It's this pattern. And I'm starting to look at this pattern. I'm starting to see how it plays out. I want to respond differently. I want to do something differently. That's going to require me to dip more into some of my insecurities, my fears, to take some different risks, to try something else. And that, we don't always know what the response is there, other than to just be patient. This is why I came to trust Buddhism. This is why I came to trust the Buddha's teaching, as he encouraged investigating inwardly, seeing for oneself what's working, what's the response. The Dharma, the Buddhist teaching, is very much experiential. The Dharma is sometimes referred to as a map. It's called the Dharma map. And so we use the map and we walk the terrain, but we walk the terrain and we have our experiences, and they're somewhat unique. So doubt, uncertainty, that's okay. Not knowing, that's okay. I know for me what balances, so what brings forth equanimity just in my environment is good friendship, community. That's why we sit as a group instead of at home. Because it helps to actually say, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Help me out. Equanimity is the part of our practice that accepts full responsibility. In a way, this path is one of radical accountability. I love the word responsibility, which my adolescent self is like a little pissed off about. But I love the word responsibility because what it really means, etiologically, is the ability to respond. And so we start to see that we don't have to externalize the cause of our suffering as often anymore. We can start to internally look and to see what's my relationship to what's happening right now. Instead of saying it's your fault, or it's the job, or it's Donald Trump, or it's outside, it's external, or even saying, you're going to make me happy. When I get enough money, I'm going to be happy. Instead, we look at the mechanism itself and say, no, this is actually anger and resentment in my mind. It's not my fault. It's not me. It's not personal. But it's definitely what's happening now. It's anger. It's resentment. This is obsession in my mind. This is greed in my mind. Oh, check that out. What does that need? And so equanimity is this understanding that my happiness is dependent upon my actions and not my wishes. My happiness is dependent upon how I relate to this experience rather than the experience itself. In Buddhism, I would say that we operate from this understanding that happiness is a collection of good habits. It's practice. A lot of times, if you hear people talk about equanimity, it will sometimes be described as non-attachment. In some ways, I appreciate this definition because the Buddha's path to awakening is sometimes described as liberation through non-clinging. When I hold on, when I cling to pleasant experiences, when I crave after the if-onlys, or when I resist and push away unpleasant experiences, in a way, I hold on to my suffering. And so, non-attachment's the practice of being able to be with, to engage, to open to see what's needed, to respond wisely, to respond skillfully, without grasping and clinging or pushing away. It's difficult to talk about equanimity in this way because the near enemy of equanimity, what it looks like sometimes, is indifference. Or what it ends up being sometimes, I should say, is indifference. Which is actually kind of dismissiveness. It's saying, oh, I'm not really attached. I'm not attached to your opinion of me. It doesn't matter. It's all impermanent. I'm not attached to the center when the roof leaks. I don't have to go I don't have to upkeep it, right? I don't have to actually do anything because I'm indifferent. It's dismissiveness. It's disengaged. And this is the near enemy of what we're really talking about, which is a balanced engagement with. It's saying, no. Actually, I do care about your opinion of me. It hurts. And I'm working at being less enmeshed, and I'm working at setting appropriate and healthy boundaries in order to not be attached and enmeshed and codependent. But I do care, and so the wise response, compassion, caring for her pain. That's active. That's not indifferent. It's not cold. It's not distant. It's warm. It's open. So the wise and appropriate response to pain, where we tend to want to avoid or to dismiss or to push away, is compassion. In Pali Sanskrit, this word's karuna, and what that means is a movement of the heart in response to pain. So when I experience physically, mentally, emotionally, pain, situationally, loss, grief, sadness, sorrow, distress, the wise response is to be willing to move towards that pain, to open to it, and to say, how can I care for this? It's very different than being indifferent, which is saying, I'm not worried about it. We're all going to die anyway, right? Fuck it. Which has definitely been my attitude from time to time. The wise, the appropriate response to pleasure. This is actually sometimes now a little bit harder than meeting pain for me, is actually sometimes we talk about mudita, which is sympathetic joy, or what we're also talking about is non-attached appreciation. The Zen master Dogen says, flowers fall with our attachment and weeds spring up with our aversion. When we hold on for dear life, when we put our grip into the pleasures of life, it sucks the joy right out of them. It automatically becomes something that I need to upkeep or hold on to, or this fear of running out, this poverty mentality of never having enough. And so this is quite a lofty practice too. As much of a practice as turning towards an opening to our pain and our shadows, also turning towards an opening to our joy and excitement and gratitude, and saying, oh, how can I stay present and really enjoy this pleasure, this ease, this serenity? I like to look at both compassion and appreciation as qualities that are present, or opportunities to practice compassion and appreciation are present, I feel like, in every moment. This is what helps me distinguish between getting stuck in black and white thinking that it's all pain or it's all joy, and instead opening to both realities, that there's both a lot of shitty stuff happening in my life at all times and a lot of, like, okay stuff happening in my life. There's a lot of areas that could be really awful that are actually fine and okay. And so sometimes it's because of and they talk about this in neuroscience, the negativity bias of our awareness, is we tend towards paying attention to what's uncomfortable and what feels dissatisfying, distressing. But also it's important to incline, and the Buddha said, to gladden the mind. Not as a way to avoid the pain, but a way to also include the joy and the gratitude. And say, oh, there's both here. And so where's the equanimity, where's the balance between in that view? even reflecting, what has your view been caught up in? We know these overly positive people, too. I feel like there are like five of them in the world, but these really happy motherfuckers that are like... I have a friend that was in recovery with me here in Nashville for a long time, moved to Florida, and he's just like, everything he does is just like awesome. He's just like pumped. He's like stoked. He's a surfer guy. He's like stoked on everything. And my question sometimes is like, dude, what sucks in your life too, right? It's probably rare the case, but like, what are you, maybe are you, you know, what's happening here? And so the equanimity is that balancing of that view and just that meeting of that response, caring for pain, appreciating pleasure. Flowers fall with our attachment and weeds spring up with our aversion. So two things to work on with equanimity practice is both access to my present awareness, this is mindfulness, access to living more embodied. This is what we get better at through practice of slowing down, of checking in throughout the day and saying, oh shit, I'm not actually here, I'm in the next thing, right? I'm not actually here, I'm in the last thing. I'm not actually here, I'm just in some fantasy about something. And so that access to awareness says, no, where am I? That's okay. It's okay that it's a fantasy or future or past, but just knowing that that's where I'm at. Oh, okay. So access to the awareness, how is it? What is it like? That's another thing that's important. So when my awareness, when I bring into my awareness, even let's talk about like intense emotion, anxiety, depression, these are things we're used to saying, words, depression. Oh, this is my depression. No, what? How is that? What is that? My mind doesn't want to be curious about that. It wants to say, no, this is depression. This sucks. I know this. And so access to awareness says, no, how is this really? And what is this? What does it feel like? Describe that. Well, it's heavy, that's sinking, it feels lonely. Well, what's loneliness? Well, it feels disconnected, I feel checked out, dull. Anxiety, what is that? How is that? It feels speedy, it feels like there's not enough time, it's urgent. And then the next question, so access to the awareness and then access to the heart, what does it need? And can we stay there long enough? Can we develop that distress tolerance long enough to say, how is this? What is this? And to just hold that question. It's not really important that we get an answer. That's the beautiful thing in this practice, is that the answer doesn't really matter, actually. What does it need? Because what it needs changes, and what it is changes. But we get better at asking the question, and so we become more familiar with our inner landscape, and we start to internally and intuitively know more and more what's in our awareness and how to respond to it experientially. This is something that cannot be taught through concept. Okay, compassion, that sounds great. What the fuck is that? Letting go. I'm going to let go and surrender. Oh, cool. What is that? I don't know. It's different. It's different. It changes. Sometimes compassion is saying, fucking enough, dude. I need to set a hard boundary and not talk to this person. I need to set a hard line. I'm not going to engage in this behavior. That's compassion sometimes. Sometimes compassion is, no, this person is really irritating me and really fucking annoying, and I've known them for 10 years, they continue to do the same shit. But actually, I do have some understanding and some capacity to hold this, and can I stick with it a little longer? Can I be patient and ask that question, how is it, what is this like, and what does it need? And equanimity is the part of our experience that knows what the wise response is. It's the understanding that sometimes it's a limit and sometimes it's a tolerance. Sometimes it's acceptance and sometimes it's change. Sometimes I need to do nothing, sometimes I need to do something. And most of the time I don't know. So asking the questions, that's what gets us to the knowing quicker. Right? I would say that's the practical application of that. The last thing, in case I didn't touch on this enough, I think it's really important, usually talked about when we discuss equanimity, is that equanimity does function from this understanding that all beings are responsible to end, or all beings are responsible to free themselves from suffering. That I can't do the work for anyone. And that it's completely, from a Buddhist perspective, wise and appropriate to wish you compassion and to meet you with compassion, to wish you kindness and to meet you with kindness, to wish you forgiveness and to meet you with forgiveness, to wish you appreciation and gratitude and to meet you with appreciation and gratitude, and then to also completely understand that your happiness is dependent upon your own actions and not my wishes. It's the humility that says that I am actually not capable of saving you. I'm not capable of doing the work for you. But I wish it for you. I've heard it said that you can let someone back into your heart without letting them back into your home. And so sometimes this is the case with equanimity with others. We've been talking a lot about self, but with others is compassion, yes, appreciation, yes, kindness, forgiveness, yes, yes, and this understanding that where does my compassion take away from self-compassion, right? Where does my external action get caught up in this false belief that I can actually fix you or alleviate your suffering? Or I think sometimes we can alleviate suffering, but fix you, do the work for you. This is that practice we did tonight. I feel you, I know you, I care about you, I appreciate you, and I understand that your happiness, my happiness, is dependent upon my actions and not my wishes. And still I wish it. I feel you, I know you, I care about you, I appreciate you, and I understand that my happiness is dependent upon my actions and not my wishes. How is it, what is it, what does it need? Then meeting that action, that movement towards, that's the action. That's how we reprogram old patterns. That's how we reprogram ourselves out of suffering into freedom from suffering. That's why happiness is a collection of good habits and not a mind state or a destination. The Buddha woke up to this Dhamma. He says, I reached a subtle, hard to see, sensed by the wise. He said, why don't people wake up to it? Because people delight and revel in their place and getting caught up in afflictive emotions and obsession, and they fail to practice. How is it? What is it? What does it need? This is it. This is quite literally all we have. And the mind wants more than that. So take patience, humility, patience, practice,